Upfront, inside the entertainment industry, is brought to you by member-supported Jazz 91.9 WCLK.
Coming up on this week's edition of Upfront, Regina Hicks, creator of the new comedy The Upshaws, is here to chat about its recent Netflix debut.
It was definitely, it was fun. It was, one of the funniest projects I've ever worked on, definitely.
And in the second half of the show, I will revisit my exclusive 2018 interview with Emmy, Tony, and Grammy-winning Pose actor Billy Porter. The Broadway star made headlines this week after revealing his HIV-positive status for the latest edition of The Hollywood Reporter and on Tamron Hall.
There's nothing better than being in the room with creators who are authentically what they are creating. There is no question about what's right or wrong. You know, if you're going to tell a transgender story, you need to have these transgender ladies and men in the room.
I'll also be playing music from Marvin Gaye's legendary What's Going On album, which turned 50 years old on Friday. But first, here's Reva Blue with this week's Entertainment Buzz.
Congratulations goes out to jazz icon Ramsey Lewis. He will be honored with the Legend Award during this year's Black Music Honors. The show will air in syndication all throughout Black Music Month in June, including a June 19 date on Bounce TV at 1 p.m. Other honorees include Angie Stone, Ginuwine, Bishop Marvin Sapp, and the National Museum of African American Music. More information is available at WCLK.com. In other related entertainment news, tune into Only Love Can Conquer Hate, 50th anniversary commemorative special of Marvin Gaye's iconic What's Going On album today at 5 p.m. The special will include such musical luminaries as Avery Sunshine, A. Scott Galloway, Donnie, Anthony David, and many more. It was written, directed, produced, and hosted by WCLK's very own Jamal Ahmed. Go to WCLK.com for more details. That's this week's entertainment Buzz. I'm Reva Blue.
Support for WCLK programming comes from the City of Atlanta Mayor's Office of Cultural Affairs, presenting the virtual series In the Tradition. Don't miss me, Ray Cornelius, and my exclusive interview with jazz saxophonist Miguel Zinnen on Tuesday, May 25th at 7:30 p.m. In the Tradition can be seen on the Atlanta Jazz Festival's Facebook and YouTube channels. More information is available at atlantafestivals.com.
Wake up. This is Spike Lee listening to my man, Ray Cornelius, up front, 91.9 WCLK.
I gotta be there for my kids. My dad was no good, so it made me do some messed up stuff back in the day.
Back in the day? Negro, you did some ignorant stuff this morning.
Where you come from? No one said your name three times.
This outfit will get me this chief administrator job.
Are you meeting with a man or a woman?
A man.
Now you get it.
Damn, I never thought I'd get me too'd by my own sister.
You just heard a snippet from the trailer of The Upshaws. It's the newest family sitcom from Mike Epps and Wanda Sykes and debuted this past weekend on Netflix. The show features Epps as the head of a working-class family in Indiana who struggles to make it work and to make it right without a blueprint to do it. Sykes stars as his sister-in-law, along with TV icon Kim Fields as his wife. I caught up with the show's co-creator, Regina Hicks, this week to chat about its success and the return of Black sitcoms.
Regina Hicks, welcome back to Upfront. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm good. I am so happy to have you back on the show. And as we were talking offline this past weekend, everyone was on social media talking about your new show, The Upshaws. Between The Upshaws and Halston, Netflix had an amazing weekend. Everyone was talking about this show and how funny it was. And I was like, okay, we got to bring her back. to talk about the show. I had been seeing little images here and there of Kim and Mike and, of course, Wanda. And I was like, okay, we knew the show was coming up, but I was extremely busy with so many other things. And then when it hit, everyone was on it. So congratulations on a successful show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. We're very, very excited. And we're happy that, you know, people are responding so well and really enjoying it. It's been great to see that. Because that's why we do it, obviously.
Yeah. How did this collaboration come about? Because I was reading a little bit, doing a little bit of research and read in the New York Times that Wanda and Mike came together and then they brought you into the process. Is that how it happened?
Yeah, it was actually, there's definitely a timeline. I think Mike approached Wanda. He just, you know, he wanted to do something kind of in this world. And then she, you know, has always wanted to do something with Mike. And so she, then they came to me, and then Wanda and I, you know, talked about the idea and, you know, discussed kind of what we wanted to do. And then that collaboration started. So then it became like kind of a three-prong. We would talk and talk and talk. And then Mike would, you know, join us sometimes, and we'd tell him kind of what, you know, what we were talking about or what we wanted to do. And then he'd give some input, and we'd have that conversation. And then Wanda and I would go back and, you know, kind of talk and outline and kind of what we want to do for the pilot. And that's kind of how it started. And we ended up writing the pilot. We weren't together writing it. So we would, like, it was a draft written, and then it would go back and forth, and it would be funny because it's like, it would come back from her, and I was excited to see what she did. And then it would go to her, and she said she'd be excited to see what I did. And then we, you know, some, we chat on the phone, and some, you know, we'd meet or so. And then we finally had something that, you know, we liked and, you know, both agreed on. And then, you know, we sent it to Mike, and then it went to Netflix. And then we got a call that they were like, you know, we're going right to series, because that's how Netflix does it. You know, no pilot process. So that's how it happened. And then we, you know, got our room together, our writer's room together, and got to work. And that's what happened.
I'm trying to step my daddy game up.
I will take all the help I can get.
When have I ever let you down?
Look, Benny, it's your baby mama.
I gotta be there for Regina. You know what? You ain't got to worry about me ever asking for nothing again. You got a phone charger, my phone down to 2%.
And how did, because, you know, when I saw that, first of all, I love Mike as a comedian. I love his presence. And I think the last time that we had seen him was on Survivor's Remorse. So when we found out, when, you know, as things were in, like I said, as images were starting to surface, it was like, oh, great. We finally got him, you know, back on primetime. And then, of course, Kim Fields, you're talking about a television icon. So what was that like bringing her into the mix? Because I think she just brings so much to any role. And I love the fact that she is named Regina.
Yes. Yeah, she, we auditioned a lot of, you know, Regina's, and we saw a lot of people. I mean, that's, you know, back in the days when we all, you know, casting was in person, you know, pre-COVID, and she just came in and, you know, blew us away. And so it wasn't even, you know, it wasn't a lot of conversation back and forth once we saw Kim. It was like, everybody agreed she was our Regina, and she was, basically, she was the needed piece of the puzzle. We'd actually, I think we had maybe some of the kids already, but she was really what we were missing. So it really came together well. And I think just casting wise, we really, you know, hit the jackpot with everyone.
And I love the fact that, because the first episode, you come out of the gate, you identify all the characters. And I was like, wow, okay, we've got baby mama drama in this situation. You've got an older son, you know, who's working for UPS. You've got this other son that was kind of in between, like, you know, like, as they were joking, I thought we were, you know, on a hiatus. Right. So I was like, you weren't really afraid to tackle what could be some uncomfortable scenarios when it comes to family dynamics. Even the episode of the baby girl who was trying to figure out, well, who is – who's this guy again? Who is he?
Yeah, how does he fit in his family, right? Yeah, we wanted to really, you know, we set out to do kind of slice of life. We wanted to do a show where you walk down the street. If you walked into a household and sat down, this is the conversation you would hear. We didn't want to like pull back on things or storylines or, you know, plot points or language. We wanted it to be as real as we could make it, but also kind of hitting on like the old school, you know, situation comedies from back in the day. Well, they didn't pull any punches as well. It's like we kind of went through those, kind of ended, and we went into this, you know, kind of weird timeline of sitcoms that were a little different. We wanted to really go back old school, do it old school, but with modern day topics. So that was our plan all along. So we kind of knew what we wanted to do and what we wanted it to look like.
Tonight we're going to go on Facebook and I'm going to show them the kind of life they could have had if their mama had married Dante. He's a doctor now.
Why don't you take the kids down to the animal shelter and show them the life that you could have had if you hadn't chewed through that cage?
I wanted to go because there was, I thought in that New York Times article, it was very interesting about this idea of the loss of black sitcoms. And this show, along with some others that we've seen over the years, we're kind of seeing this renaissance again, this interest of black family sitcoms. I mean, when I grew up, there was Cosby Show, there was Family Matters, you had the Jeffersons. So do you feel that we're now back in a time where these situation comedies are being accepted, that people are gravitating to them a lot more?
I mean, I definitely hope so. I mean, I hope that, you know, we can, you know, that if people are responding to, you know, to the Upshaws in a positive way, I think hopefully it, you know, maybe sets a tone. Maybe other folk will do it as well, so that we get, you know, more of these shows on the air, because it was a case of not seeing kind of a messy home life sitcom on TV. It's like, you know, we're not perfect, and I don't think they expect other sitcoms to always be perfect. So why, you know, we shouldn't have to walk that same path. And there's room, you know, there's obviously room, and the landscape is wide enough for all kinds of these stories. So yeah, hopefully this is, you know, just the beginning.
Absolutely. And what was it like, you know, this was all taped during COVID. So what was that dynamic like? Cause you've worked on several sitcoms before, but you've never had to work through a pandemic. So what was that like?
You know, it's funny too, because, you know, I've seen some of the comments, you know, and people, you know, people talk about, I guess the term is canned laughter, which isn't true, because, you know, we started with the actual studio audience, which is the nature of a sitcom, nature of a multicam. And we did start, you know, pre-COVID, we had studio audiences. We were, you know, having tape nights. It was this great thing. And about halfway through, COVID happened, and we thought we were doing the 2 week, you know, everybody around town, you know, we were taking the 2 week mandatory hiatus. And then of course it extended into a lot of months. And, I didn't, you know, no one knew we were going back. Within a week, Zoom rooms, you know, sprung up all over town. Writers came back to work virtually, but there was still no production. And so a lot of writers' rooms, you know, started, finished. I mean, we started our room, we got finished all our stories, sent writers off to script, but that was really all we could do. And then I guess, you know, Netflix and studios and everyone started figuring out how to bring people back safely. And it, you know, it took months to figure that out, to get the protocols in place. And we came back in the end of September, early October, to finish up the rest of the, you know, rest of the episodes. And we did it in the COVID safety way that shows now are still using today. So with lots of masks, lots of, you know, there's a COVID, kind of COVID officer on set. Daily test. We had, you know, they recommended every 3 days. We asked for daily testing, so we got that. Because, you know, I wanted to make, I really responded in, you know, just in my own life, like a complete lockdown. So I really, if people were going to go back to work, on my watch. I really wanted people to stay safe. So we ended up finishing with, you know, no one testing positive. So that was great. So we did finish the season in COVID.
And no, I gotta ask, what is it like when you see Created by Regina Hicks come across the screen? How does that make you feel?
You know, I've been chasing that dragon for a while. I couldn't have asked for it to come across the screen with a better person. I mean, Wanda's been amazing. She's kind and very, very generous. And and to see it come across the screen and then, you know, hear people respond positively, it just, my heart explodes. It's just, it's kind of a, you know, a dream come true. So I think I'm still kind of, you know, waking up from it, but it's starting to grow on me because, you know, it's a big responsibility, you know, to run a show. And I've kind of run one, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't created by me. So I had such passion, you know, every step of the way from, you know, the thinking of the stories to the post-production. And to see it all come together and be on that screen is, it's pretty indescribable, actually.
Well, Regina, thank you so very much for being a guest today on Upfront. And again, congratulations on The Upshaws, which is currently on Netflix. And again, just so super excited for you. Reggie, of course, has been beaming about it. And yeah. Again, so many people were talking. I just, even before doing the interview today, someone was like, hey, have you seen this new comedy, The Upshaws? You got to check it out in a social media group that I'm a part of. We have this long thread of a continuous conversation, and it came up today. It was like, hey, have you seen this? You got to check it out. So congratulations on a very, very popular show.
Oh, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Look for The Upshaws now on Netflix.
Support for WCLK programming comes from the Life Lux Jazz Experience, November 4th through the 8th, 2021 in Los Cabos, Mexico. Performers include Eric Roberson, Mesa, Mike Phillips, Hiroshima, and is hosted by Mark Curry. There will also be health and wellness activities and a sunset cruise. Information is available at lifeluxjazz.com.
Oh, don't go and talk about my father.
Talk about my father.
God is my friend.
Jesus is my friend.
He made this world for us to live in.
For my last segment, I decided to reach back into the Upfront vault and re-air a portion of my exclusive interview with Tony, Grammy, and Emmy-winning actor of Pose, Billy Porter. The Broadway icon is currently on the cover of The Hollywood Reporter, where he revealed his HIV-positive status. In the article, Porter confesses that it was time to share this intimate detail about his life with his mother, after having to confront it for 3 seasons now as the character Pray Tell on the hit series Pose. Our conversation initially took place in July of 2018, after the first half of the show's first season, and Porter was excited to chat about this role and the show's potential to change the entertainment industry. He was also grateful that he'd survived the AIDS epidemic to tell the stories of his friends who were no longer here to speak for themselves.
I was initially called in for the role that Charlaine Woodard plays now, who is she's the head of the dance department, the dance teacher that Damon goes to school at,
right,
the New School for Dance. And, you know, I knew what the material was about. And so when I got the sides for the audition, I thought, well, that's wrong. I should sort of be in one of these houses, or I should be the mother of a house or something. Like, I need to be voguing. I need to be, you know, over there.
Yeah.
But I prepared the audition as it was. I went in, I did the audition for the dance teacher. And then in, you know, my grown ass 40-something-year-old self, I said, I just have to take the leap and have this conversation with this casting director. And I said, you know, I was here. I lived it. I've been in the culture. I lived through the AIDS crisis. I think it would be a waste of your time to be doing a show about this world and not have me actually in the world. It would be a waste of your time and mine and your resources inside of me. Like, I will bring so much to that side of it. Like, you know, what about one of the mothers of the houses of or something? And that's when she revealed to me that, you know, Ryan Murphy really wanted to go transgender, which I think is an amazing idea, as you have seen.
Yeah.
But what emerged from the conversation was that, you know, they needed a male energy. We needed a leading male energy in that space, in that place. And that's where the MC grew from. And it sort of was built around me and built out of, you know, me being brave enough to sort of have conversations because I actually know who I am and what I do.
Yeah. Now, what do you enjoy the most about playing Pray Tell? Because when I tell you the stuff, you had me dying when I think it was, oh my God, you said the category is fur. And you said, I want to see Bugs Bunny on your back. I almost died.
You know, it's very fun because the thing that I love is that Pray Tell has all of the dimensions, all human dimensions. And, you know, for the first half of my career, I wasn't afforded the opportunity to have those dimensions. You know, I felt like I was pigeonholed into sort of being a clown, you know, and a clown without substance. I don't mind being a clown. I don't mind stopping your show. I don't mind being fabulous, but not at the expense of my humanity. And what I love about this piece is that you get to see all of it. You know, you get to see the whole person, and it's just such a gift. You know, it's such a gift to be able to sort of tell this story on this platform at this time. You know, I'm so grateful that I lived long enough to see this day.
Yeah.
You know, the world has finally caught up.
Yeah. Now, did you guys know that it was going to be a major hit? Because, I mean, there was a show that Whoopi Goldberg had produced, I think, which was more of a reality series that focused on the transgender career. But this, to me, is just, and one of my questions.
Well, Dominique Jackson was in that.
Right.
Dominique Jackson, who plays Electra, was on Whoopi Goldberg's show. It was about transgender models.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Let me ask you, what has it been like working with Janet Mock, who has served as one of the directors, correct, for the show?
Yeah. Well, she's a producer. She's a writer. She's in the writing room.
Okay.
And she also directed her very first episode. You know, there's nothing better than being in the room with creators who are authentically what they are creating. There is no question about what's right or wrong. You know, if you're going to tell a transgender story, you need to have these transgender ladies and men in the room.
Right.
You must. You know, and for so long, we have been so used to the norm being otherwise. You know, everybody's used to white people telling everybody's story all the time. You know, very often. And that has changed a lot over the last couple of decades. And people are realizing that the authenticity comes from being authentic, and you can't be authentic unless you've been there. And so it's so beautiful because there are no questions that need to be answered. The answer is standing right in front of you, and it's comforting, and it's freeing, and it's exhilarating, and it's groundbreaking. I feel like we're on the precipice of something new and fresh and life-changing and mind-altering in the consciousness of the zeitgeist, if that makes any sense.
No,
you know,
totally.
I really feel like it's that big.
Suddenly my world has gone and changed its face, but I still know where I'm going. I have had my mind spun around in space, and yet I've watched it growing. And oh, if you're listening, God, please don't make it hard to know if we should believe the things that we should we try and stay, or would it be better just to let things be living here?
So we just heard a clip of you and MJ Rodriguez performing the classic Wiz song Home. And I got to tell you, when I heard the piano part, I was watching it with my niece and I almost started. And she was like, she's like 24 years old. And she's like, oh, God, what's going on? And I was just like, oh, my God, this the Wiz is my favorite story, music, musical, that whole thing. And so when I heard it, I was like, oh, Jesus.
Oh, here, Lord, here we go.
Right. So what was that? I mean, how did that come? How was it filming that scene? Because it was that was so freaking powerful.
Well, you know, like I said earlier, I lived through the AIDS crisis, and, you know, to be a survivor of that has been really interesting in terms of, like, once you survive something like that, how do you keep living?
Okay.
And how do you learn how to live and love? You know, we learned how to fight. We learned how to fight for our lives. We learned how to, you know, but we didn't learn how to love. We didn't learn how to live. The people who were supposed to teach us how to do that died in a plague. And so to be in this space and to be telling this story of these people, of this kind of loss, the depth of this kind of loss, you know, I remember in the late 80s, early 90s, and through the 90s, there was a organization called Hearts and Voices that was sort of connected to the Broadway and cabaret music scene. And we would go, you know, every Wednesday, I think it was every Wednesday, we would go to all the hospitals around New York and do cabaret shows for about an hour. And, you know, every so often I would just go and do that. And it was a service that we did. And so it brought me back to that time. It brought me back to that place. And my friends, you know, all of my friends that I lost, they've been showing up. You know, their spirits have been with me. They've been supporting me. They've been holding me up. So full to tell their story, to remind the world that they were here. It's so important. It's so profound. It's so transformative, and it's very difficult for me to talk about sometimes because I can't ever get through it without weeping. Because I miss my friends. I really, really miss my friends. You know, but we get to do this. And it's really remarkable.
Watch the full interview between Billy Porter and Tamron Hall at WCLK.com and catch Pose tomorrow night at 10 p.m. on FX.
Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother, like,
well, that'll do it for this week's show. I'd like to thank all of my special guests, Regina Hicks and Billy Porter. I'd also like to thank our engineer, Jami Wellman, and you. Please join us next week for another exciting edition of Upfront, Inside the Entertainment Industry. If you like today's show, please hit us up at WCLK.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront, Inside the Entertainment Industry has been brought to you by Jazz 91.9 WCLK, Atlanta's jazz station, and is recorded from the campus of Clark Atlanta University.
Don't need to escalate.